Hi folks, welcome to the next edition of Serverless Crack. We have a special guest today. It's with me, Dave Anderson, technical bizarre voice and author and contributor to Serverless Age. I'll let Mark introduce yourself first, and we can introduce our guest.
Mark McCann, architect of globalization partners and author and contributor at the Serverless Age.
And we have Mr. Paul Swale with us today. Hi Paul, welcome to the show. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hey, thanks Dave and Mark for having me today. Yeah, I'm Paul Swale. I'm an independent serverless consultant, working with helping teams get started with serverless on AWS.
Cool. And so we've done a few things together, different meetups and stuff, like, so it's great to have you on. Before we get into it, I wanted to just say thanks for reviewing the book. You're one of our early reviewers, and you were quite kind. So I can be honest, I'm interested to see a new book coming called The Value Flywheel Effect. So what did you make of it from your perspective and your experience?
I really enjoyed it. I think what I particularly liked was the fact that, see, a lot of the stuff where I'm coming from is from the individual contributor level, sort of from engineers and possibly seeing architects, that sort of bottom-up approach to why serverless is good and like all this. These are the architectural patterns that make it great. But just that thought, just moving, especially from my, I do consulting as well, so trying to get buy-in at a higher level and to sell those higher level benefits from like the total cost of ownership, just that sort of top-down ideas for why serverless is worth adopting in an organization, because the sale is a kind of a longer term sale, like around like it's not all you do need to invest in learning it up front, but the benefits are there in the long term. So that's, I really like that angle you have in the book. Just, it's something which you have to put in place at the start, like, and then you reap the benefits over time.
It's funny because it's funny to describe it. We'd often talk about a pincer movement. The engineers get excited about it, but you have to go up and bring the sea level along as well, and you absolutely need both. Like, so
I think creating that environment for success is, we've all had hard lessons learned about, you know, trying to make these sort of changes without that right environment, right? So sometimes when you do the bottom up and, hey, get all the engineers about technology X or technology Y, and that environment's not there, it gets stifled, and then the engineers get frustrated, and you know, either they leave or they abandon what they were trying to do. So like you said, I think connecting those dots and bringing the top down and the bottom up is hopefully what we've achieved with the book.
Yeah. And I mean, and one of the big concepts in the book is obviously serverless first. And I think when we first started to kind of meet up, I remember when Mark and we started thinking of serverless first and reading about it, we eventually thought, I wonder what the domain name is for serverlessfirst.com, and we looked it up. So this guy from Belgium.
Oh no. Oh, sorry guys. Yeah, I know. I don't know.
Which is cool.
I don't know when.
Tell us about the background on that.
Yeah, I can't really remember like where I first seen the phrase serverless first. Like it's kind of been, I should Google it and see what the first chronological result is. But yeah, it's kind of from a mindset point of view. So thinking of like, I have like a notes page where I have like the serverless mindset and then the serverless first mindset, similar, but serverless mindset is like just the whole benefits of using serverless for in terms of total cost of ownership and why like you can do things with smaller teams and using serverless for your architecture pretty much by default for everything. Serverless first is slightly more pragmatic adaptation of that, where you recognize there's still maybe use cases, be they sort of brownfield integrations or like systems which have really special operational requirements. So say low latency, like transaction or financial transactions, something which serverless wouldn't quite fill. So it's saying, right, we'll use serverless by default first as our architecture of choice, or using services of choice, and then falling back to whatever alternatives, whether that's EC2 or whatever non-serverless or less serverless services for certain parts of the architecture where that makes sense.
We found that as well. We were all going ho, serverless, 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 and then people were like, well, you know, that sounds a bit mad. And once we changed it to being okay, it's serverless first, not serverless only. It's you know, there's plenty of compelling fallback options that if this doesn't meet your needs, you can fall back to. And I think it resonated more with those, you know, situations where there already was an established solution, there already was a context in place, there already was, you know, skills and experience and the pathway to production. And so it definitely opened a lot of doors for us internally when we were trying to do this, that people were then more accommodating or more willing to embrace serverless because we weren't coming from a purist point of view anymore. We were being more pragmatic and being more understanding of the context that the teams had. So I think it brought the teams on the journey more with us when we were talking about serverless first and saying, hey, you must go serverless, right?
Yeah. I think it also makes it, there's a nice way, it's not, there's a misconception. I think I've seen somebody posted a blog post recently, serverless versus microservices. Like the serverless is some like, you have to go all in it or not. It's like, well, they're just different concepts. It's not one or the other. It's like, you could have an existing microservices based app and then suddenly then just decide, okay, from we want to use serverless from now on, and individual services within that individual microservices could be serverless based. So it's just showing ways of just gradually introducing it into a, like say a huge microservices based system. There's small ways of just introducing it piece by piece.
When we were facing those similar challenges, that's when Worley mapping and mapping out your tech stack became really useful for us, because you can see the individual components and say, okay, let's take that component and move that to serverless. Instead of saying, oh, the whole thing must move, it's like, let's just do a bit at a time. Let's move on to a bit at a time.
And there was definitely a piece where I remember it was probably 16, 17, where you think, right, the serverless is now mature enough that we can start just using this properly. So that's when we had done, talked about mobile first, remember, Mark, and then API first. So it looks like a nice mindset that now it's ready to start building this way. But it's not, we're not going to move everything going whole, like, but it's like, don't bother with the lower level stuff. We don't need to. Can you remember when you first started here? I think it was Ben Kehoe started talking about it. That's going a way back.
I'm not sure who came up with the original term. We leverage a lot of, like, Ben came up with the serverless spectrum. And we almost use that almost like that diagram. And then that sort of inspired the whole fallback. You know, hey, you're falling back to things further back on the serverless spectrum, right? But at least you're on the spectrum, right? At least you're aware of it. But I'm not sure the lineage of a lot of these terms. I think we all knock these things around.
It's funny. Yeah. So that one thing as well, I mean, I think your newsletter, Paul, is brilliant with some of your daily writings. I don't know where you get the energy to keep writing so much. It's super impressive.
Well, I had a break over the summer, so I need to get back to it.
I've seen that, but it's a really impressive library. For anyone that wants to look that up on servicefirst.com, there's loads of brilliant kind of writings and notes. But one of the things you wrote about was that idea of kind of leading with context and about what is the favorite tool, what good tools and practices are not a good fit. So that's something that we've been talking about forever, because especially working with teams, you'll say X is interesting and everyone just does X automatically, but you always need to bring that context. I think it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental thing with developers. Generally, they identify with the technologies they've used frequently and they get really attached to it, and the fanboyism sort of kicks in as well. So there is that. It's just some innate thing with, I had it as well for several years, and there probably isn't a tendency to do that before your rational mind kicks in and say, well, hold on. When is this, what are the drawbacks of this, or what sort of context would this not work in? So I think in that piece, Dave, that you mentioned, it was kind of the way I see context is very vague, it sounds, but I would split it up rough. There may be other ways of splitting this, but I would say sort of the application context or of the actual system, like what features or what sort of operational, like latency and performance concerns you need the system to have. And then there's the actual organizational context. The first application context is kind of known. People kind of know, like, I'm building this specific app. It has these features and these requirements. But the second, the organizational context is like, what developers do you have available to you? What skill sets do they have? What are they just more developers and don't really have much ops skills? So are we going to need to hire infrastructure folks, or do we have infrastructure folks and they mightn't have much to do now because we're using serverless, and that may cause friction and these kind of things, which are all they all need to be considered for whenever you're considering adopting new technologies for a new project.
It's huge, and the article's great. So if anyone hasn't read it, go off there and read it. It's on the serverless first email list, I think it is. I think you put it on LinkedIn as well. But yeah, totally agree. And I think we've all got tool bias. It's like, hey, we're all going to CDK, or we're all going to the serverless framework, or we're all, and then you rock in and it's like, well, what's your pathway to production like? How do you actually release value to your customers? Oh, you've got it set up in this way. So you're like, now we're much more aware of leading with that context and making sure that you're not impacting negatively that time to value as you introduce these new tools or techniques. And you're, like you mentioned, right, you got to know the socio-technical context, right? It's not just the technical, it's the socio stuff as well as the whole organizational hierarchy. It's all, how does stuff get done in this company, in this organization, in this team? And you got to be very pragmatic about that. And totally, I think the article really resonated with what we were saying, is like, you know, you gotta really understand that context before you start wielding the hey, you must use this tool or lines, right?
I think it's a message for anybody who advocates for serverless as well, for people who are like, just there's a lot of focus on the architectural benefits, like generals, like architecture, lower technical stuff, which it's all important, but it's all very sometimes it assumes a lot of knowledge. It assumes like you might have a lot of AWS expertise in-house already, or just there's a lot of assumptions there saying this is the way you should do it. But it's like, it's not very it really isn't always, I guess, especially when you have so many wide range of services that AWS does, there's just so many things, so many nuances around decisions around the best way to use it.
We see that a lot, especially when you're more experienced, you rock in thinking, well, not necessarily all of us, but you think, oh yeah, I know this, I've got this. But the wee junior developer who's just come in the door knows more about this particular technology than you ever will. And you gotta be open to that, right? And it's more of that, right?
Yeah, I heard a really good, there was a podcast recently, who was it? It was Joe Emerson. I think it was Adam Elmore, he was interviewing. Yep. I think Joe, I've heard Joe talking about lots of things, and I think my worldview is very similar to his. He is a CTO of a insurance startup in the States, and they usually use AppSync, but he said something really resonated. It was around their software engineering guidelines say we optimize for long-term maintainability, and their hiring policy is for they really hire junior developers and get them trained up rather than looking for seniors. So that totally informs any architectural decisions that they make. Like they probably shun sort of more complex services or things which require higher operational burden because they don't want to hire special infrastructure specialists. But just that whole, I just like that mindset about focusing on, I think they generally smaller teams with that's junior developers can come in, learn quickly without a lot of mental overhead or trying to think how this work cognitively.
Yeah. That's so important because we're of the same way ourselves. I mean, the two parts in the book that I think is interesting is in that flywheel is the second phase, which is challenge, which once you have an approach, create the environment that you can challenge the thinking. And then the fourth one being long-term value. And that's what you're always shooting for. And we talked about using well architecture as a way to kind of frame that. But there's not, like, it's the worst thing in the world when you have a senior engineer who thinks, well, let's build something really complicated because I'm really smart. You know what I mean? And Mark and I, maybe it's because we're simple people. It's like you just, the beauty of a good system is simplicity. And it's always worth going that extra bit to get the simplicity, and don't overcomplicate things just for the sake of it. You know, it's I know it's a legal thing, Nick, but sometimes people just build things that are way too complicated and it's not really helping anyone, you know?
Oh, yeah. I have seen that totally. Totally in my in recent stuff as well. It's just this is just not gonna, I can't really help you if you want to go this complex. It's just like, this needs simplify.
I know you're really smart, okay, but this isn't helping anyone.
I think the team topology guys, Matthew Skelton and Manuel Paz, they coined the, you know, you're organizing for cognitive load, right? And it's like you're building these solutions for minimizing the cognitive load for your teams. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the same language we, you know, what is it? Build solutions that fit in your head, right? Don't over-engineer, right? Only build what you need. It's the same sort of stuff. We want to make sure that, you know, we are maintaining that cognitive burden or lowering that cognitive burden for teams and not throwing. And one of the terms we use is like, is it Googleable? Can you Google these technologies, or is it something you've just custom built that only you know, right?
Yeah, it's something, even if you're like the architect, if you imagine yourself, right, I'm not going to be here for 2 months.
Yep.
How will the team fare? Have I designed a system that's simple enough for either, even like you could go, like they say they hire a new developer in the meantime when I'm not there to get them up to speed. Like that's a bit extreme, but it's that kind of like I always often see like the lead architect or the initial developer who creates the architecture, when it's complex, it's very tied to them. And if they're away or they're not there, it just becomes, how does this work? How are we passing messages through all these different systems? And it's like,
it's a good test as well, but sometimes if you go back to a piece of work and you can't remember how it worked and you designed it 6 months ago, you're like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's why I'm loving the maturity in the serverless sort of ecosystem. Like I'm loving that the fact that like all the developer advocates are starting to codify and articulate their patterns in serverless land. We have CDK patterns. We have these things that are Googleable that teams can reach out to and see, well, how do I do this in, you know, API Gateway or Lambda or Dynamo? There's lots of maturity of those sources, right? So if we move on, they can just reach out and see the videos, the tutorials, the documentations, the workshops are all maturing and they're established now. So, you know, we can feel good about this, the way we've architected the system, that was set up for long-term value, that we're not just going to build something and move on and then, you know, the team will crumble. They have almost like AWS effectively become their platform team if you follow this serverless first approach, right? And they're going to keep investing in it and keep making it easier and adding more features and capabilities. So I think there's lots to be said for architecting in that way, that, you know, we have integrity that we're not setting you up for failure. We're not going to be that superstar that comes in and builds your solution and then, you know, sods off, right?
Yeah. My kind of, as a consultant, I kind of, because I'm not a long-term employee and I want to get teams up to speed quickly, but I do support them, but not as an embedded engineer or anything on a longer term basis. But that kind of makes me extra aware, because it's kind of on my, like, my goal is to make it understand, as well as getting it built, but is making it understandable, and so that I don't become a long-term, I can roll them off and they can become self-sufficient as soon as possible. So that kind of helps me to optimize for making decisions that around architecture that the team can take on board themselves and run with.
It's interesting. It's a bit like you know, teach a person to fish, you know what I mean? Almost your goal is to sort of, how do I get out of here as quickly as possible? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Once you get the thing done and you're gone, like, which is
in a nice way. So, in a nice way. Exactly. Yeah. Because people could do the opposite.
Yeah.
People could do the opposite. Just give them a load of, like, if we're working system until you leave, and then, like, how the hell do we fix bugs or add features to this?
Yeah, you don't want to be a hard dependency for a team, right? It's like, we've seen too many of those type of consultancies where they come in and they then become the dependency that you must rely on, right? We want to enable and empower the teams to be successful, and then go off and have your own adventures, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of the service, how do you see service evolving? Paul, you've obviously been there for a long time. Like, where do you see things going next?
Ideally, I guess one of my sort of reasons for being attracted to it in the first place was the whole, like, as a developer working close to the product, potentially full stack developers, like do the front end and back end, but they can effectively, you can have a team effectively of one back end, one front end developer, and they do everything. So tools which will optimize for that, for really small teams that will help them get stuff done, like do all the operational stuff, like stuff which could still be easier, like getting sort of standardized CI/CD pipelines and testing mechanisms around that. But the tools themselves, like, I think there's good work being done around sort of friction that serverless had over traditional app development, around like just having to deploy to the cloud locally and making that fast. There's a lot of, I think that will, there are tools doing that already. I think that will continue to get better for that individual developer experience. But yeah, I think there's, and Serverless Stack as well, SST, they're another one who do a lot of, like, yeah, they're making a lot of good, really good abstractions that just make less boilerplate and other, just making natural, like, good decisions around IAM. So creating stuff which are complex AWS nuances. It's an important service, but it's a big overhead for developers to learn. So without needing AWS certifications and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I was speaking to Emily Shane recently, and she works at AWS, and she had a great phrase. She talked about serverless is like an operating model. So serverless is almost becoming like an operating system, operating model for the cloud. Mm-hmm. So that's that abstract layer. So then it's what are things that people put on top of that? You know what I mean? It could be like a microservice architecture or an event-driven architecture or whatever. So I think that's a really interesting space. There's definitely a lot of optimizations and tightening up those abstractions. So it's exciting times.
And I think you're bang on about the developer experience. I think it's matured a lot. I think there's still a while to go around that, but it's definitely it's in the conversation now when it comes to really good developer experiences. And I think they've plugged a lot of those gaps that we had early doors. So it's great to see that evolving. And I think connecting those sort of disparate components together into holistic sort of developer experience is coming to the fore now. So it's great to see.
All right, good stuff. I think that's us. We're nearly at time. So cheers for the conversation, Paul. Really enjoyed it. So how do you feel, what's the best way to reach out to you?
You can get my website, my newsletter is on serverlessfirst.com. Get me on Twitter at Paul Sweel. And quick plug, if anybody, I just launched a new testing audit service. So if you have teams that are having problems with bugs in your serverless app in production, and you need to, and you want to write some better tests, yeah, let me know.
Wow, that's a bit popular service. You'll be inundated with people.
We'll see.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much. Go ahead, sir.
Okay.
Cheers, guys. Well, thanks very much. Really, really appreciate it. And great to chat. And still the crack. So don't forget to have a look at serviceforce.com. And thanks for the conversation. Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye.